What is up, everyone? I just wanted to drop one here and tell you a couple things before the episode starts. One, it was very fun to do an episode about comic books only with just me and Bender. We haven't done that in a while. Two, you'll hear us at the end of it, or kind of most of the way through it, talk about Butcher Queen with Jim Moosley and Ben Sawyer. They're about a little over 80% funded with just under a week left. So when I tag them, go follow to help get them a stretch goal. It'll be awesome. And then finally, a good friend of mine, and Shane just had him on his podcast last night, so I think that'll be released soon. Named Brian is helping put on a Freedom Jam concert here in St. Peter's coming up soon. You can find that through Facebook called Operation Triage Freedom Jam. I can even link that as well. And I might be talking to Brian at some point soon for that. Other than that, I don't know if I have anything else. I hope everybody is still healthy and sane and as about as ready to get out of their house as I am, and we get to do that soon. So, like I've always said, until then, though, the pandemic sessions continue, and this is a pandemic-style comic pod. So I hope you enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon, and just wait for the bomb, and now. Yeah, I did buy the $12.99 Greatest Hits version of the newest God of War on PlayStation, so I'm going to play through that.
Oh, the new God of War is sick.
Yeah, it's the Greatest Hits game now, so I'm excited about that. And I downloaded
the story alone is solid. It's probably one of the better just all-around stories that in a video game ever. I'm waiting for I still haven't beat that the Star Wars one. I forget what it's called.
Yeah, the newest
Jedi
one.
Jedi or Fallen Order or something like that.
Yeah, Fallen Order.
It's about a Padawan kid who's on the run or whatever. It's pretty good. It's got a decent story. It's got the, what are they called? The seven, or they're not full-on Sith Lords. They're the Inquisitors.
Oh,
Inquisitors.
Yeah.
They're like Darth Vader's underlings and stuff. Like, Asajj Ventress was never really a Sith Lord. She was, like, in training. They're Force-sensitive, but not as powerful as a Sith Lord. It's pretty good.
Well,
it's a fun game.
Let's go ahead. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and start there, because this episode is in entirely comic book related. But I do want to say we are back. And just because on the note you were just talking about with referencing the Star Wars video game, is I did rewatch The Rise of Skywalker this week.
I haven't watched it yet. What do you think?
My opinion has not changed. It is I like it still better than the second one, but still not a great movie, but yeah, some very good parts in it. And again, I'll reiterate, I enjoy every single moment Adam Driver's on screen.
Yeah. I haven't rewatched it yet. I'm gonna force the wife to watch it. She enjoys them, but she doesn't. It's like once you get her down, like actually watch them, she enjoys it. But like convincing her to watch a 2-hour movie is daunting sometimes. Especially when we're only we still have two more seasons of Outlander to watch.
Oh boy, that's rough.
It's pretty
good. Well, let's jump into comics. But I will say, speaking of seasons, go ahead.
Did you ever watch that video that I posted on the page about the guys who animated the Colin Trevor's original script?
I don't know that I did. Maybe I missed it.
A month ago. It's the guys who do Weekly Planet podcast did it, and it's pretty solid. He's basically just kind of talking over it, but they do a cartoon like version of the Colin Trevor's original script what was released, and it's pretty solid. It's worth a watch.
Okay.
And honestly, they kind of make an argument. I don't hate The Rise of Skywalker, but I I think I would have rather seen the Colin Trevor version of the story. It's worth watching. You should go back and check it out.
Well, someone...
about a month back on the page.
Someone famous who... Oh, one of the voices from the Clone Wars, who's a big Star Wars geek, but he's a known actor, but he's also a voice from the cartoons. He said the problem with the second one, your favorite of the newest trilogy, was...
Nah, I wouldn't say that.
was that it was a fine movie. It just wasn't a good Star Wars movie. And he said because Rian Johnson did not come into it with his Star Wars research. He didn't come into it to make a Star Wars film. He just wanted to prove that he could make a good film in the Star Wars universe. And he said that essentially was his problem with it. Speaking of cartoons, before we jump into comics, the second half of the season of Rick and Morty came out this past Sunday. And it was
the
first episode. But that it might be one of my favorite episodes they've done so far.
Really? You better than Pickle Rick? See, I cut Sling, so I have to re-find all the Rick and Morty's now.
Oh.
I don't think it's on Hulu yet.
The newest one may not be, but the old season, the old episodes are.
Yeah, season one through three are, but I don't think season four is on it yet.
Yeah, this one, this episode is, I'm not going to ruin it for you, but they are stuck in a story loop on a train that is, there's, let's just say this, there's a lot of flashbacks and there's a lot of stories and the whole thing involves around the train is a meta story device. The whole train's a story device is what Rick keeps saying.
Okay.
So anytime they go into a different car, anytime someone thinks of something, it tries to tell another story and you never know what's real going through the whole thing. But it's so much meta jokes in it and so much Dan Harmon jokes that it makes me happy.
He kind of did that. Was that the beginning of the season where they did the heist?
You love the heist episode. You'll like this one even more. They're my two favorite episodes.
Yeah, because the heist episode was pretty clever, too. I really enjoyed that.
This one is telling a story. I don't know. This one's hard to explain, but the jokes are so good.
Have you, if we're going to stay on TV real fast and other things that I'm watching that aren't Outlander, I finished the Star Wars Rebels cartoon.
Yeah.
Now I'm going back and rewatching the Clone Wars. That's a solid cartoon once you get past the first season. It's definitely good canon. It's set between Return of the Jedi. It's set after the original Clone Wars. Rise of the Sith or whatever, and between Rogue One. And
okay.
It tells a solid story. It's worth a watch. I finished that. And then I'm watching the completely opposite spectrum. I've watched a couple episodes of Dave on FX.
I've heard it's good. I haven't watched it yet.
The white rapper, Little Dicky.
Yeah.
And it is fucking spectacular.
Yeah, I've heard a little. You're like the third person to recommend, so I may check it out here soon.
It's that awkward comedy stuff. Like, it's funny, but he's not really trying to be funny. He's just that awkward guy that always makes the situation worse, you know, and it's spectacular. And then he raps in it, and it's pretty fucking good. He does a lot of like self-mutilating humor. It's fucking great.
Self-deprecating humor?
Yeah.
Self-mutilating? That's a different thing.
Yeah. Self-mutilating. You know.
He chops his arms off while rapping.
He probably raps about it. Yeah.
The one show that me and the wife have started and finished this week was, because it's only seven episodes, but I highly recommend it. It's Hollywood on Netflix. The only thing you need to know. God, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name now. Ryan Murphy created High School Musical, or not High School Musical. What was that one that was on Glee and American Horror Story? And it's kind of like, if I could give you an elevator pitch, it's the golden age of Hollywood as told by a very happy Quentin Tarantino. So it's alternate history, but it's alternate history in a good way, in like a positive way for strong women, a positive way for minorities and black people. And you keep waiting for the other shoe to drop on it, but it's just a fun show. A lot of nudity, a lot of prostitution, but really good.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, but
I've never even heard of this.
It literally dropped this week,
and we watched it this week because it's 7 episodes, so it's an easy watch. Oh, and Sheldon Cooper.
Extraction?
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But Jim Parsons is in it, and Jim Parsons is so far removed from Sheldon in this. He is the most disgusting, perverted man in the show, and he cracks you up.
He plays a straight dude?
No, he does not. But he's hiding what he is, but he's also very crass. He's like at one point he goes, please, there's nothing I don't know. I've got my finger in every stink hole in Hollywood.
I haven't watched it just for that because that'll be weird to hear.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah, it's gross. And it's great character arcs. But you just brought up, and we'll do this one last one and then we'll jump into comic books. Extraction was awesome.
Yeah. Spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah.
I watched it last night, me and Jeremiah.
Their best action movie to date.
And everybody and I think it might be Netflix's best movie so far. I think they had like 90 million screens in the first 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah,
which is pretty solid.
Well, you had Thor, so that was gonna be a big show because of that.
Yeah. And it plays like it's based on like a what's that? Like almost like a Jack Reacher type thing, but I don't think it's based on a book or anything.
I don't think it is either. But it is going to be a series now, you know, or a trilogy or whatever they're going to do.
And the one or both of the Russo brothers did it. The guys who did Avengers.
Yeah, they're the producers, right? Is what they were. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think they helped co-write it or whatever. Man, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Hey, great movie.
Acting, the special effects were good. There was only one scene where they crashed the. Where they jump out underneath the bridge and crash the car. I was like, that kind of looks like shit. But I'll let it pass because he literally, like 5 minutes later, gets into a fight with all those little kids on the street.
Oh, that was awesome. And then it also had this weird character dynamic with him and who you think is kind of a good guy. And then he's like a real bad guy. And then they become part. It's a good movie. I recommend it.
Oh, it is.
It's like a 4.5 out of 5 for me.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy the hell of it. And then also just to watch David Harbour be a bad, bad guy. You're like,
oh, yeah. He's not good at all. When we got it, I go, oh, Hopper. And I was like, oh, Hopper's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning. Yeah. But, yeah, solid film. I'm excited if they do more because – and they kind of left it to where he could still be alive. And he took
didn't you catch it at the end?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Not only could he still be alive, but they...
We shouldn't do spoilers. Well,
They also left it to whether or not it was a part of his imagination or if it was real, but still, just watch the movie. That didn't ruin how awesome it is.
The twist between the good and bad guys was very well done. Very well done by the end. I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, speaking of... the high praise, and I never said we are back, so I guess this is the official start to the episode.
I think you said we're back.
Well, I said we're here. Regardless, there's only two voices. It's you and I, and this is officially a pandemic-style comic pod because we are going to do more comic books, and we're going to talk about one book, really focus on one book in particular, and don't spoil any news that you saw today about it until after we're done talking about it, speaking of Netflix. We're going to talk about this comic book that a few weeks ago you recommended to me, and I finally got around to reading it last week, and I read it all in one sitting because it's that good, and two, it's short enough that you can do that.
Yeah,
but we're talking about this book released from.
It's very fast. It's a deep story that is an easy read though.
Well,
very
fast, and that's part of its appeal, and we'll get into that in a second. But we're talking about this book called The Old Guard from Image Comics, released in 2017. In case you don't know who wrote it, it's Greg Rucka. And if you don't know who Greg Rucka is, I was first introduced to Greg Rucka years and years ago, before you and I were even close to being friends, before I was even, I might have still been in high school or at least college when Whiteout, the book, came out. And then he went on to do Queen and Country, Detective Comics, most notably No Man's Land. He did Wonder Woman, Infinite Crisis, DC 52, and a whole lot more. The artist on it.
I didn't know this.
Go ahead.
I didn't know this. He was originally a novelist.
Yes.
For this, and he's got like 15 books. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I just found that out doing research for this. So I'm trying to pick up some of his books.
And the other part of this creative team that is Old Guard is Leandro Fernandez, who's famous for Deadpool, Punisher Max, Incredible.
Glad you tried.
Also, he also did Spider-Man Tangle Web and the aforementioned tag team project Queen and Country with Greg Rucka. So they have a history. The book itself, and I'm not going to try to spoil it too much because it's so accessible for Hoopla, for people to read, for our friends that are, and friend of the show, Jay, said he's going to read it. So in case he hasn't read it, he listens to every episode. So I don't want to ruin it. It's a book about a team of people that are essentially immortals who are also contracted mercenaries who find them, and they are super old. Some are much older than the others, but they find themselves in a day and age to where they're taking jobs, one-off jobs, and never working for the same person twice. Well, at the beginning of the series, they do decide to work for the same person twice, and that's where the problem comes in, because this person has kind of noticed some things about them, and they end up, you know, spoiling, or this is a little spoiler, they ended up catching on camera what they are, and that causes a lot of problems. So that's the premise. The thing you need to know about the people is, one, it's mainly centered around the team leader, which is Andy, and I'm not going to try to pronounce her real name.
Yeah.
And then
I couldn't even figure out what country she's from. Yeah. I need to Google that, if it's a real country.
And then
she's the oldest also.
Yeah. And
she's the oldest immortal.
And we'll let you determine how old she is. I will let you find out how old she is as you read, but... And then the other, I guess if there's another main character, you get introduced halfway through it, and that's the newest immortal, because what you need to know about the immortals is, one, it's never explained why they're immortal, only that they end up having these dreams around the time their immortality is triggered, and these dreams also are common among all of them, so they can track each other down when a new one becomes immortal. And the other thing you need to know is they can die. They just have no clue when or why. They can get shot up and they'll regenerate and come back, but one day one of them will just die and never come back.
Yeah.
And they kind of find themselves wanting to do that for the most part, but they can't make it happen. They don't know how it happens, and they don't know how anything. That is a part of the appeal of the book for me, because each character, along with the story like that, what I like about it, and I'll go ahead and throw my rating out there. I gave it a 4 out of 5. And the reason I did that is because, not to compare them to Wolverine, but they're Wolverine done right, is that they're super old. They have a very complex backstory. You don't hear enough much about it. You don't really know about it, but they give you enough of the great details like they used to do with Wolverine that it makes you really love what's going on without knowing what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the main character, Andy, for example, there's they flash back and forth to different things that she liked. It was mostly originally in the first several issues, it was just other immortals that she had ran with over the years that had, you know, fallen at some point and never got back up. But they do a pretty good job of around her meeting and falling in love with a slave that she was originally bounty hunting, and you know, and going through their whole life together and aging him. And it was, I think it was maybe 2 pages altogether.
But yeah.
The story it told was so well drawn and so articulated so well that, and it was short on purpose, because one of her things is the things that make her so angry is the fact that she's forgotten more things than, she's forgotten so much stuff that she doesn't remember any of her original family or anything like that. So,
well, and that's,
the older she gets, the more frustrated she gets that good memories keep fading away, and she's only left with the scars of battle.
And that's you'll have to read it, but you're also that's also a little misleading too, because she is so guarded and so calloused. I guess callous is a word. We don't know that she actually doesn't remember those things. She may just be telling projecting outward and telling herself that she doesn't remember, or convincing herself that she doesn't remember, because she is a hardened person.
Yeah. And one of the other, when they meet the new girl and they're explaining things to her, this won't spoil too much because they flesh it out a little bit better later. I'm blanking. I had the characters pulled up and now they're gone. I lost the page I was on. The one guy, the youngest one before her, she goes, "You want a you want to cut off all ties to your family. And yeah. She's like, well, I don't want to do that. I want to be able to see my family grow old. And she's like, explain to her why she doesn't want to do that. And he looks at her, and I've never seen this from any like immortal style movie before or anything. He looks at her and goes, it's not that you're putting them in danger. It's the fact that you're going to look them in the eye and they're going to ask for a cure or ask why you're so young and they're so old and what's your secret and you can't tell them. And the last memories you have of them are them physically hating you,
spitting in your face,
the good memories that you have now.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, that's hard hitting. It was a pretty good like way to think about it.
That's the other thing that's great about it, because that's not the first time. I mean, watch any vampire movie, like from Interview with a Vampire book or anything, and they have all attempted to do it. But in this five, six issues, they did a much better job of conveying the emotion that comes with that.
Exactly. And normally, like when you see it in a movie, like I also just recently watched Highlander because of kind of this.
I don't want to argue with you over it. I don't want to argue with you over it.
But, you know, in other movies where they do this with vampires and stuff, it's normally like they grow old. They even do it in this kind of where they grow old and they're like, all right, you got to go away or, you know, you're going to drift away peacefully. I wish I could be with you forever. But in this, they do a good job of like that conveying the anger of like when the hatred that like explaining like just good memories turning on you. And I like that. It made it.
Yeah, they've always showed the sorrow of watching a loved one grow old. They've never showed that loved one starting to hate and despise you and resent you. Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. Jumping over to the art, I felt it was, I wasn't familiar with this artist much, but I felt it had like a very, all of a sudden I'm blanking on his name, Batman, Frank Miller vibe. Sorry. I feel like his art was very Frank Miller-ish.
Yeah, I think I can kind of see where you're going with that. I would almost say more Mike Mignola in the shading. Maybe not even that. I'd actually say more like Gabriel Ba in things like Umbrella Academy and stuff.
I guess I'm thinking of it more in the faces of the characters. The characters' faces are much simpler, but convey a lot of emotion in minimal amount of lines. I can see Mignola, but...
Well, I'm very... Go ahead.
I think it's like the way they use shadows and solid black colors in the backgrounds, like a lot of like there's a.
It's not.
I was rereading some.
It's not overly complex art. It's not. It's not bogged down with a lot of background detail.
But it's. Yeah, but it's the simpleness of it makes it interesting, and it draws out the some of the more brutal scenes. It draws more attention to like the brutality of the fight or the recovery. Yeah.
Very frenetic the way the story's told with the art style and the fight and stuff.
One of my pages is when they jump off the building. It's one of my favorites. And they're like, she's like, you'll heal. And then, you know, they splash page it at the bottom. That was a solid one. I really enjoyed that. Overall, I really, it was first time I've read an Image book. What I liked about this most is, and this is why I like Image, is they do a lot of this where they do like a 6-issue run, and it could be done. Like, this is back, I think. They're doing another run now. I think they just released a couple issues. I think there's two of another 6-issue run out right now.
Yeah, they let you know at the end. They let you know at the end it's coming back. And it's listed as an ongoing through Image, and it's one of Ruckett's three ongoing through Image.
Yeah, but it also the story wraps up nicely to where
it could be just that.
If a pandemic ended and Diamond stopped pushing or came out and Diamond stopped pushing comics, it could have ended smoothly, you know, like, you know, that would ever happen.
Yeah. For me, the art, I don't need to compare because I collected Punisher Max, which was Garth Ennis's run on Punisher, and this was one of the. This was Steve Dillon being the other, but this was one of the artists that worked on that. So it really, I mean, it. Which Garth Ennis and and Punisher Max kind of lends itself to being in the same vein of storytelling, you know, with all, a lot of the blood and guts. So the book, it looked great. And if one thing, I never read Queen and Country, but I can tell you the covers, I always dug the covers, and the same artist. So, yeah, he's it's weird that he hasn't done more work because his art is very dynamic and different.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
What's your rating on it?
I would give it a 4.5 out of 5. I just think they did so much in so much story in such a short run. I wish more comic books could do that.
Yeah, but, wish they would. They get too greedy.
It felt like a movie.
Yeah.
Like the last book I read like this was, it's not comparably the same, but like compact and concise and fun. All the way through was like Chrononauts.
Yeah, Chrononauts, which was optioned for a movie before it was even released as a comic.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same thing, which I think they might have more comics of that now, too, but I'm not really sure. But that told a whole story in 6 issues that was a lot of fun. It was a good ride.
Well, it's good that...
That felt like a... Chrononauts feels more like a Michael Bay movie, where this feels more like
I think we're on record... We're on record saying that on this podcast is talking about that.
Yes, yes.
But that's a good thing to bring up at the end because, and this was good timing on you discovering this book and recommending it to me because pictures from the movie were released today.
Yeah,
with Uber Hot, and by Uber Hot I mean the upper echelon in the pantheon of hotness, Charlize Theron as the main character, Andy. And not just Charlize Theron, which is already enough cred for an action movie, thanks to things like Atomic Blonde and even more so Furiosa from Mad Max. But to really nail down the geek cred, they've got Chiwetel Ejiofor in it, which is...
Good job.
Yeah, I had to look up to make sure I didn't butcher it, and I did. So I watched how to say it, and then I phonetically spelt it out. But... I knew it was Ejiofor, and for those that don't know who that is, they're a fan of this show, and they're dumb for not knowing who that is. And I apologize if you're that dumb. He was the assassin in Serenity. He's been in 12 Years of a Slave. He's been Love Actually. He's quietly one of just the great British black actors in all of Hollywood.
He's in Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yep.
I guess he's. I'm thinking of Sherlock Holmes. His name starts with an M, but he's going to be the bad guy or a villain in the second one. Spoiler alert.
Oh,
he's remember the end of death?
Yeah.
He was one of the monks.
I know who he was. Yeah.
Yeah. And he also did a movie called Red Belt, which is pretty solid. You ever watch that?
Yeah, that is, you'll have to, I gotta really scrape the brain on who made Red Belt. It is.
I don't remember either. I didn't look it up, but I just remember like it being one of those movies that I was like, I'll watch this. And then I was like, damn, this is good.
It's a director it's a writer director I really like. He did that Tom Cruise movie where he was a hitman with Jamie Foxx.
I know you're talking about.
What's his name? We're looking. David Mamet. Yeah, David Mamet.
David Mamet.
And he's done. He did.
Did he do the Jamie Foxx movie?
I thought he did. He did. Maybe he didn't. He did. He's done a bunch of movies that all feel the same way in terms of how the way they look and feel on the
drama
thing.
Roles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about. He did Heist, which is a spectacular Gene Hackman film. Hannibal. Ronin.
Oh, Ronin's maybe that's great. What I was thinking of. Ronin. He did Ronin.
Ronin. Yeah. Ronin's awesome.
Yeah. The best car chase scenes in movies, I think.
It's got Gene Reno or John Reno.
John Reno. And it's got Robert John De Niro.
Reno. Yeah, Robert De Niro.
So I didn't see when the release date was, but the pictures look good. And it's a Netflix movie. And
July.
July, that's awesome.
Coming out in July, which I was hoping that they were, when I saw the pictures today, I was like, oh, Are they releasing a trailer, but they're not.
No, what I love about Netflix, though, is they release a trailer about 3 weeks before the movie comes out. So I don't have to wait.
Yeah. I'm pumped for it. I read a little article on it. Charlize Theron said she read the comic. So, you know, I think it's pretty cool. And she's a spectacular actress. So.
And by the way, I liked Atomic Blonde. I liked Atomic Blonde.
It was great. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was just a female John Wick. I had a lot of fun with that. There was one that I watched, I forget the name of it now, that I thought was similar to that. It's like Anna. It's called Anna.
Yeah, I like that. I enjoyed that.
I think it was going to be the same thing, like Atomic Blonde-esque. It's not. It's fucking terrible. Don't waste your time.
Oh, see, I thought it wasn't that bad. Wait a minute. No, I'm thinking of, there's another one.
Anything of Red Sparrow?
No, I didn't like Red Sparrow.
I didn't watch that one.
No, there's like, Hannah. Hannah's the other one with a single name and an assassin girl, and that one's pretty good.
Yeah, Hannah, that's got like Eric Bana and it's a little girl.
Yes, right? Yeah, that was good.
No, Anna's it's about a supermodel. Well, that's her cover. And she's like a Russian agent, and it's fucking terrible and boring.
So do not watch.
No, the fight scenes are awful.
The director of this movie version of Old Guard is Gina Prince Bythewood or Bytewood.
Mm-hmm.
She's known for a lot of TV, Cloak and Dagger being one of the geek-centric credibility of it, but she also directed Love and Basketball, which was a really well-received movie and a pretty enjoyable movie. So it should be good. I mean, she's got some comic book credibility and she's just got good filmmaking credibility.
Yeah, I guess my only worry was that she doesn't have any like real action movie credibility, but she definitely knows how to do a drama. I think she wrote Love and Basketball as well.
Yeah, she wrote, directed, and produced. So
character arc. Yeah.
So that book was very good. That was a good recommendation on your end. I recommended, or at least I brought to your attention that War of the Realms was on Hoopla, and yes. And so
I'm burning through it.
And so is Jason Aaron's complete run of Avengers now.
Yeah, I've read the first six. Is that as far as you are in that?
I read the first six, but I did read... See, I read War of Realms first, and then I read Avengers, which was kind of out of order.
It is out of order, and I've kind of jumped around. I'm doing both at the same time, which is confusing.
So I enjoyed the first story arc of his Avengers run well enough. I tell you what, here's my knock on it. I think he very much wanted it as a giant monster book with these Celestials, mm-hmm. these all-powerful Celestials. And it wanted to read like a Cloverfield or something like that. And it didn't quite, I don't know if it was the art, whether it was a story, what it was, but it didn't feel that as grand as an adventure as I think it was intended to be. But what it did is it certainly gave us a weird cast of Avengers together that I kind of enjoy. Mm. And I didn't think I would.
I agree. Yeah. I didn't know anything about the new Ghost Rider, but I liked it.
Well, that's a good starting point because he's a person that I had no interest in learning about, but now I find myself enjoying him.
Yeah, same thing, and
that'd be Robbie Reyes is his character's name too. So
yes, yeah, and you know I think he kind of came about because you know the Fast and the Furious movies do well, and
there's no doubt. I think
old Ghost Rider was very 80s-esque feeling or 90s-esque feeling. Yeah. I'd say so. They did a good job of updating with an old charge. He's basically a skinny kid with a charger,
and that had to be the pitch. They had to say, let's Fast and the Furious this, because Dom in the Fast and the Furious, I believe, drives a 1970 Charger, and Robbie drives a 69 Charger. So
yeah, that's essentially it. I do like in this, he's a fish out of water a little bit, you know, like he's way in over his head, but he's doing the best he can. And I enjoyed the hell out of that.
And he's got all this ungodly power that he doesn't even know.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a lot of fun. He's... and that's where it gets kind of confusing, where I'm reading the War of the Realms and this at the same time, because he's also in that part. So, and he's figuring out his powers as he's battling Malachi or whatever, the dark elf. So yeah, it's confusing to read them both at the same time. I read an article today or an interview with Jason Aaron, and he wanted this to be Kirby-esque with the Celestials and the big kind of over-the-top battle at the end.
I could see that. I guess that. I could
see it. The colorful art. I don't like it as much as I like his Thor run. I didn't. But I did enjoy it much more than... I enjoyed the simplicity of the story of the Avengers coming together and fighting a threat. The last Avengers book I read prior to this was Hickman's entire run.
Which is more Hickman book and less an Avengers book.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so fucking heavy. And it was kind of all over the place because I didn't read any other events around it. And coming out of the Hickman book, at some point, you know, they don't address the fact that Steve Rogers is an old man by the end.
Yeah.
Or the fact that Tony Stark is kind of evil for some reason. He went evil at some point for some reason. Or that the Hulk is... I forget what the Hulk was. He was something else, too. But they don't address any of that. And in this one, they got real simple with it.
It's an action story. It's an adventure.
They bring back Thor. They bring back Tony Stark. And they bring back Captain America. And they're like, we're just going to...
Yeah.
We're just going to go all out.
It's very high on adventure and low on exposition, which is what Hickman does, is a lot of exposition, a lot of extra peripheral stuff. Like we already talked about his X run, which was good. But I found myself sometimes going, I'm not reading an X-Men book. I'm reading a Brian Hickman book.
Yeah. And I read the first six issues like you did, and we talked about it. And by the end of it, I was really excited for Hickman's run. I know we're kind of getting off track, but I was excited for that because I was like, oh, that'd be great to see the X-Men start over and have a jumping on point. And there was nothing on that I read that I was like, I really want to stay with this. I think it's kind of stupid. I didn't like the fact that they were like rehashing the X-Men all of the time.
Yeah.
Like you could die and come back. That was kind of dumb. I didn't care for that.
Yeah. The more I let that sit and fester, the worse I liked it.
Yeah. It takes away the gravity of like the danger that being a mutant in this time is. And, which was always like a metaphor for racism.
Yeah.
Sexism or anti-gay, you know, like. And it just kind of takes that gravity away, and I didn't care for that. I did like the Marauders book. I read a couple issues of that. I thought that was pretty fun.
And yeah, we got off topic, but I think it's it's still related to the topic because it was Hickman's run before Jason Aaron's run, and they tell a very different style. And we've also referenced that you're reading and I've read War of the Realms, and I'm not going to try to spoil it for you too much or other people. I will just say I love all the Thors, and that was my favorite part of the book. And that's the only thing I'll tell you, all the Thors.
Do you know, because I haven't looked it up, why does Thor have a bunch of hammers now? Do you know? Did you ever bother to look that up?
No, I didn't read it. I know he's unworthy of Mjolnir. So
he got it back. And Jane steps down.
Yeah.
But now he's got a whole bunch of hammers that, like, Screwbeard or whatever gave him. That's a fucking great troll name.
I'll have to read Aaron's run.
I didn't know if you read into it. I was just wondering. It doesn't matter.
But when I say all the Thors, you're going to love the end of it. But one thing I will say is Jason Aaron does Thor well, and he does adventure well. And that's one. And even though I didn't feel like this was, I felt like this was trying to be bigger than what it was. You are right. It brings together it emphasizes the big three. DC has Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman. Marvel has, even though Spider-Man technically should be one of the big guys, he's only Avenger in some stories. But the big three are Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. And I'm a big Hulk fan, so why is Hulk not one of them? But he's just not. Those are the three iconic heroes for the fictional, inhabitants of this universe.
They're the tripod.
Yeah. For the people that live in Marvel 619, they're the three people they look to as the heroes.
Hulk is always on the verge of being a bad guy more often than any of those.
Yeah, he's a bad day away from wiping out a city. So, so they do a good job of bringing those guys together as real close friends. Tony reluctantly wanting to form the Avengers. And then I think they do a good job with the new Ghost Rider. They have a Hulk and She-Hulk, although I don't remember. I didn't ever read where or why Jen Walters is now super thick. She used to be smoke. And I know this is, I'm talking about a drawing and a comic book character, but she used to be smoking hot even. And one of the things was she was more hot as She-Hulk than she was Jen Walters. So she would stay in She-Hulk because of that and would never turn back. But I don't
know. She was more like slender.
Tall, back. Very tall, but still a tall, model.
Slender. I think she's, they have to address it at some point because she's losing control. And she was more, and that was the thing, is she was never as strong as the regular Hulk.
Not at all. He can still own her, but she's still pretty damn strong.
Yeah, but she also never really lost control.
And she does now.
She does now. So she must have had some sort of like gamma.
And she doesn't even refer to herself as She-Hulk when she's raging. She refers to herself as Hulk in the in it.
Yeah.
So it's
maybe she is the new Hulk in this run. Like
before he's brought back. That could be.
Yeah, I don't know where this runs against. What is it? Immortal Hulk?
Hulk. Yeah, they gotta eventually coincide, but it could have started with just her. But I will say this. Let's finish this. Let's do the roll call. So it is Captain America. It is Iron Man. It is Thor. It is She-Hulk. It is Ghost Rider. We've discussed them. It is also Black Panther and Doctor Strange, and that makes for a pretty formidable team. If it's not it's not the norm, but it is a good solid team.
Now, and we're also leaving out a good section, a quarter of the book, which is a million years ago.
Yeah,
Odin and the original Black Panther and the original Phoenix.
The original Iron Fist.
The original Iron Fist and the original Doctor Strange.
Sorcerer Supreme. The original Sorcerer Supreme.
Sorcerer Supreme.
Agamotto.
Celestial. And I'm sorry, hold on. Yes, sir.
We're taking a mental pause here for a kid interruption.
Sorry, my daughter.
That's okay. Yeah, Agamotto. I don't know how to pronounce it, but the original.
Yeah, Agamotto. I think you're right. But yeah, that was a pretty fun story seeing Odin battle that too.
And Odin had the hots for the Phoenix.
Yeah, and like definitely stuff. I feel like there was another run that came out of that. Like there is a. 1 million or one, you know, like the original Avengers miniseries book that came out of that with that cast and crew. But I feel like he definitely sleeps with her. So there's got to be a character running around now that is their child,
a Phoenix Asgard hybrid.
Yeah. I thought that was a fun take that I thought was like. Kind of stupid, but still entertaining. You know, like, it felt very comical. You're like, this is a dumb team, but it was fun to, like, see those guys run around and see, like, a young version of Odin.
Yeah, so yeah, well, like, the youngest version we've ever seen of him. I mean, that's when he was first God. The only thing I'll say is, I guess the original Iron Fist was more powerful because that's a... Phoenix and Odin alone and the first Sorcerer Supreme, that's a pretty powerful group for a Black Panther, an Iron Fist to be standing with. But they were the original heroes, apparently. And they also kind of rewrote Marvel history a little bit. In the Marvel Universe, humans are a byproduct of the leaking the blood of a celestial, fallen celestial. Yes.
That was pretty interesting. Oh, there was also a Ghost Rider that rides a...
Oh, that's right.
Woolly man. Which is fucking, that's pretty fucking cool.
And it makes sense. It stands to reason that Ghost Rider should be around there because he is a spirit of vengeance. So overall, I'm going to finish it. And I don't know if this happened for you, not just because of the free digital downloads that they have for some Marvel books, but Hoopla upped my monthly allotment. I guess because of the
15 now.
Yeah, because of the pandemic. So I'll
really cool.
Yeah, I'll finish the Jason Aaron's run. I'll get through it here this month. But yeah, I enjoy it.
Those are the two main books that I brought. I think last time we talked, I talked to you about Weatherman.
I need to read it. I haven't done it yet.
Pull the trigger on any of that?
No, but I've got time. And we'll get to why I haven't read it yet here in a second. In the I've decided to call the instead of throw it to Missy, since it's a comic pod, we'll call it the letter column, where we've just got all the other knickknacks and stuff like at the back of the books that you used to get mm-hmm. people right in. So
absolutely, I like it.
But so no other books you've read been reading. The only other book that I've read is I was sent by Jim Ousley, friends of the show, Jim Ousley and Ben Sawyer, which is the mm-hmm. creators of Butcher Queen, which, by the way, just so everybody knows that's listening to this, as this comes out, this will come out on the 8th of May, which is tomorrow as we record this, is a Friday. It's 80% funded, and it has just under a week to go. So let's get that funded. Let's get it over the funding and get a stretch goal.
I get paid tomorrow.
I think they have a $65 plateau, which is pretty solid. You get all four digital copies of the book. You get the original cover, but you also get like a custom sketch, like a one-off sketch, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway,
are you going to link that in the?
Yeah, I share it once a day minimum. So, But the they sent me Dead Palace, which was the first book from theirs, and I put a tweet or a Instagram of it up of last week, The Rough and Tumble. You and I both read. Their second book was The Dead Palace, and I finally finished it. And The Dead Palace has the origin or the first story we've seen of Cid Kiowa, which is the Butcher Queen, the main character mm-hmm. of Butcher Queen. Dead Palace was very good. I tell you what it was, and I will tell you why I liked it. You can see the evolution of their ability from Rough and Tumble to Dead Palace and now to Butcher Queen. It's cool to see some guys that I know personally now, and mm-hmm. you'll have a chance to meet them at some point. Evolve their talent, evolve. It's pretty cool.
It's like watching your kid grow. Even though
I think Jim's quite a bit older than us, and he's been. but it's awesome.
But his childlike talents grow and. And I don't know what I'm saying.
It's worth. I read it. I loved it. If you can buy it, I think you can get it through their website, either Jim Ousley or Ben Sawyer. You could go. You can Google both of them and find them. But that's the only book that I've read. And you can read. I'll let you read Dead Palace too next time you're coming over, and we're going to get to that.
When we can see each other in person. the other thing I'm reading right now, and I'm not super far into it, is I'm reading, I don't know if it's their Scott Snyder's last Batman thing, but the Last Night on Earth.
Yes.
Only a few issues in. Is it his last run?
Scott Snyder, it's the last story, Batman story told, and I did read it. I forgot I read that. I read all of it, yeah.
I'm only I know it's one of three issues. I think I'm like 60 pages in. He just met Wonder Woman. She's saying they're going to go into the underground, people above. I guess it's a quick synopsis is Batman wakes up in an insane asylum. And
he's in Arkham. He's in Arkham.
I'm sorry?
He's in Arkham.
Yeah, he wakes up in Arkham. Alfred comes and convinces him to let him out. He gets out, and basically the world is ended by some threat named Omega that he doesn't know who he is. And Batman runs into Poison Ivy and a couple other people, and they don't realize. I didn't catch this in the beginning. They say they reference it, but apparently Batman has clones of himself that once a generation wakes up, so that every generation has a Batman.
Yes,
and this is this generation's Batman, and he meets Wonder Woman, who's real punk rock with a shaved head and mohawk type situation. She's given up on Earth. Everybody's dead. The Flashes are gone. Superman's supposedly dead, and she's going underground with what's left of survivors, and Batman refuses, and he's going to go fight Omega. He's carrying around the Joker's head and a lantern, and it's talking to him.
Yeah,
that's as far as I've gotten.
And Omega is in Gotham, uses Gotham as his point of...
I guess they're going to allude to whoever Omega is. The last thing they said is it was an ally. They haven't told me who it is yet.
I'm not going to spoil it
at
all.
You can spoil it. I don't really care.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to for our readers or anything, because it's on Hoopla. It's very accessible, and there is a plot twist in it or big reveal, so I don't want to ruin that. I'll tell you this. I liked it better than Sean Murphy's White Knight, even though Sean Murphy's White Knight looked amazing.
Yes.
And I don't know if I give it. I'll tell you this: it's a rim shot away from a four. It's like a 3.75 with some moments that are real strong. I enjoyed it overall. I remember when it came out, but I had forgotten about it. So when I read it and it was suggested to me by the Hoopla app, I was like, oh, this is a pleasant surprise. And I read it and I liked it. The Superman thing in it, I think, is one of the better written parts of it. So you'll have to wait till you get there. But yeah, Superbook. I mean, it's worth finishing.
And that's what I like about. I think DC does a better job of something like this, where it's like a self-contained story that is canon, but also
doesn't impact the regular universe unless they decide to make it later. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an option. You know?
They certainly give themselves a lot of plot threads that don't necessarily to be pulled on, but can in case they want to.
Yeah, and I like that about that's the one thing I do like about DC over Marvel. Other than that, I don't really, there's not a lot of DC characters that really.
Yeah, you like the real world feel of the Marvel characters more than the larger than life feel of DC. You've said that quite a bit.
I disagree. I think the DC characters, I don't think that they feel larger than life. I think that they're just not as relatable
Well, that's kind of why. I mean, Superman is larger than life. He's not relatable.
Yeah, he is. But like Captain Marvel or Captain America or.
Yeah, but I guess Marvel's done a good job of making Captain America feel like every man, because that's how he started, with actually the ultimate underdog. And then your favorite guy, Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is the most relatable guy out there.
Exactly. Yeah, so I see what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that there is more relatable characters. And I guess I just, that was Spider-Man, like the art when I was a kid drew me in right away, and there was nothing really on the DC side that I was really digging. I didn't think. And I guess when I was younger, like a guy who runs fast, that's stupid. A guy who talks to fish, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And you start to think about it as you get older and you're like, damn, those are pretty awesome powers.
Yeah, and they really fleshed Flash out, and they really also made Aquaman super. You know, they threw in Peter David, who ended up doing the definitive Aquaman run, threw in, well, he lives at the bottom of the ocean, so he's super density, so he's essentially as tough as, like, way tougher than most people that aren't Wonder Woman and Superman. So, well, let's go ahead and jump to the letter column, the last section of this, to see if there's anything we want to touch on. The one thing I did want to bring up is Diamond has announced, well, I don't think we've talked about it on the show yet, they're going to start shipping again on May 20th. So comic books will be coming back to the world.
Which is spectacular news.
Yeah, but that said, Marvel announced that some books that were ongoing are not coming back. They're going to shift over to a hard copy format and a digital format. So some of the books, I'm sorry I didn't write them down, but some of them have been some not fairly massive, but books that are notable are coming back to a monthly digital release, and that's going to save overhead. And apparently
they're only going to do digital releases and then a trade paperback version.
Yeah. But what they're all, well, of certain books, like the flagship books are still going around. What they're doing is they're going to try to, and it's smart on their part, instead of, and it also keeps them, and I think Marvel and Diamond combined to be the biggest centers in the comic book industry about how they go about it. But what they're going to do is they're going to tell, instead of forcing people to buy a million comic book stores, I mean, to buy a million books to see which 30,000 sell or 300,000 sell, you know, they're going to take some books that have a little bit of a following, but maybe not enough to generate monthly sales for comic shops and Diamond itself, and move those to digital. But the big books, like the Avengers and the Spider-Mans and the X-Men, those are all going to still be monthly printed books.
Yeah.
So hopefully, could be a good format.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, because, I mean, it sucks to see the comic shops struggling. You know, it's a tough business in and of itself. We've talked about it. We beat that horse to death. So it does kind of suck. On a lighter note, I was traveling around today. I took the kids fishing, and I got some bait real quick at the 3rd Street bait shop right there. And the comic shop there was open today. And he had one or two cars coming
awesome.
In, like one person at a time type thing. And That made me happy, and I was excited to see. I stop in there every once in a while, leaving work.
Is that Comic Relief? Is that that one?
What's that?
Is that Comic Relief? Is that the store you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
A good shout out to Comic Relief. Well,
he's a nice dude.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that I brought on here too is one thing. Some doomsayers will say that, and they've been saying this since I got into comics in the 90s, that this is just the next nail in the coffin that is print comic books. But I think this is kind of a good move to save the print comic books, because the print comic books survive based on what the comic shops are doing. And like you said, we've talked about that. Well, now they're, this also allows certain creative people to make a little bit of a living or make some money, get some funds from doing what they love, see a comic get out there, but not force. I mean, if a book's only going to sell 30,000 copies, it's probably not going to need to survive. But that book might have an audience now. In fact, it might be able to grow an audience organically and then see print one day. Or that creator, you know, grow his following and see print, or she. So, yeah, I think this could help. I think you have to thin out. You have to stop making people buy a million copies of books. You have to stop making them buy every single book that ties into a big event. And maybe this could help do that. And now you can make some certain things tie into epic events and drive some online sales. Who knows? And don't make those expensive. So,
You know, like the online platform is in, like things like Hoopla, which we honestly, they should pay us at this point.
Yeah, no doubt.
Make it accessible to people to read things that maybe they wouldn't necessarily pick up or buy the trade of. For example, I read not too long ago, we've talked about it, but I read The Prince of Cats, which is basically a 80s hip-hop version of a Romeo and Juliet
that's
told from Tybalt's view, with samurai swords and hip-hop in New York City in the 80s. And it's awesome. Spectacular. I really enjoyed it on Hoopla. I looked it up, and Spike Lee is making it a movie. And the combination of Spike Lee picking it up to make it in a movie and the digital re-releasing it digitally through Hoopla and stuff sparked a re-release of trade paperbacks. So it went back into print again because the demand was so high.
That's awesome.
Other things that, you know, the guy who wrote the book 10 years ago, he's getting more money again because of different things like Hoopla and all these digital, this other stuff. So like you're saying, if a book does really, really well, like for example, when we talk about this, I think like Next Wave type book.
Oh, Next Wave is one of my favorites. Yeah,
it's hilarious.
But
it's
awesome. It wasn't a top 10 seller.
No, not at all. But it is a cult classic at this point in the comic book world that people enjoy and love. And once you read it digitally, it's one of those books that you're like, I'm gonna buy this. Because then I'm going to go back and read this once a year, twice a year. You know, when I'm in a lull of something else, that's a book I can always pick up and always enjoy.
Yeah, Dirk Anger is that comfort food for me.
Yes, exactly.
It allows the audience. Yeah, it's a good way of growing your audience that you otherwise wouldn't have had a chance to. So I think that's worth it. I absolutely like it. I'm glad. The other thing I had that I talked about, I said I wasn't reading as much as I really came out of the gates reading when this pandemic hit, is I've been drawing a lot more. And
I saw that.
Yeah, and the reason I bring that up, I got a couple of really fun things that are in the works for us podcast hosts, the four of us. But one of the things that I've been not stressing over, but I get really getting angry over, is I can draw all this stuff in my paper, and I can do it whatever size I want. And I'm limited to the quality of scanner and whatnot I have to put it and then work on it on the computer and stuff like that. Well, I've solved that problem because tomorrow or Monday, my new generation iPad Pro 20 or 12.9 comes in. And I've already got the pencil, and so Procreate will be used, and I'm going to start drawing on that, so it will easily be uploaded to online and whatnot.
Nice. I guess you spent your Trump bucks well, huh?
My budget for my company was 200. We were 220% over budget for Q1, so I got a fat bonus. So
there you go.
That doesn't even make half of it. Plus, I know a guy that works for Apple, and I get his discount. Yeah. So
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so that I'm excited about that.
That is awesome. Good for you, man. I haven't been doing much drawing. I'm not really much of an artist, but between trying to work 40 hours and taking care of the little kids here at the house, when I do get away, I've been working on a green thumb, planting different things around the yard and pots of plants here, and then just building stuff. I had fun. The other day I made a concrete planter for a plant that I bought. I just made a planter out of concrete, poured it, and it was, you know, easy and fun. I just was bored. I was like, let's see if I can do this. So I've been doing stuff like that. And I started off, like you said, reading a bunch of comics. But then I saw that HBO's got a movie coming out called Love, or not movie, a new miniseries coming out soon.
Lovecraft Country.
And Jordan Peele is, I don't know if he's directing or producing.
He's the producer, and he is directing the first episode.
The Lovecraft Country?
Yeah.
Or is it Country?
No, that's it. Lovecraft County.
Yeah, Lovecraft County. So I've started reading that book, and it is, it's Country.
Country, okay. Country.
It's by Matt Ruff, and I started reading that book. I'm about a quarter of the way through it. I'm really enjoying it.
The show looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. And it's, you know, if anything in the book, at least in the first three quarters of it, it's like, man, black people had it really rough in the 60s, 50s and 60s, like trying to go across the country. The whole premise, if you don't know, is, at least the first off premise is this guy's looking for his dad, and he's got to go to the New England-ish area where Lovecraft is from. But getting there in the first quarter of the book is a journey where he's got to cross certain towns that don't like black. If you get pulled over,
a lot of racism.
And that's the first quarter of the book is him just trying to get through that stuff. And there's a book that they reference in it, which is a real book, but it was the Negro's Guide to Cross-Country Traveling, or I forget what it's called exactly, but it was basically, I'm going to St. Louis. So here's the five places in St. Louis in 1959 that'll, you know, you can eat dinner at and you can sleep at. And that was a real book.
That was a real thing.
They had, and the main character in the book, it's his uncle is the author of it. So they're kind of traveling around and finding different things. And I'm like, man, it was rough to be not white back in the 60s. White people were terrible.
Yeah, we got it made.
I haven't got to the Lovecraftian stuff yet. They're just touching that. But it's an enjoyable book if you're looking for an actual book.
Yeah, I may check it out just based on the show, because I've heard from some other people that the book is well worth reading. So
yeah. Same. And then I saw the trailer and it made me pick it up, and I'm like, well, if Jordan Peele's turned it into a show, it's got to be worth it.
Yeah, because his shit doesn't stink.
yeah, for sure.
Let's wrap this up by talking pandemic for just a brief period of time. We did a good job of not talking about that. One, I made a note on my notes earlier about this. I will be interested to see what kind of stories come from this pandemic, like comic, movies, TV, or otherwise. But also, so as we as a county, state, and country start opening up the world, what do you think is the John Bender time frame for allowing himself and for going back out into the world, and more importantly, coming over and doing the podcast and having a beer?
By mid June.
Just give it, because you have a wife in the medical industry, so it's kind of hard to, she's around, she's not on the front line per se, but she sees more people because she has to, so I could see where you would delay it a little.
Her exposure level is much higher, and it's not so much that...
It's potentially much higher.
Yeah, it's potentially much higher, and I don't want to, if I were an asymptomatic carrier and brought it to somebody else, I'd feel terrible about that. I don't want to do that, so that's mainly my thing. If she had an office job like me and like you and Missy have, like, fuck it, who cares? We're fine. But the fact that she travels out so much makes me a little worried.
Yeah, I got a feeling.
Mid June would be optimistic because Missouri's opening back up now.
And there's also this give it a couple week before you see what happens, because we're going to it's gonna be an uptick.
Yeah, I want that 2 weeks to see if that uptick, which is inevitably going to happen, is a minor blip, which is what we're hoping for, or if it turns into a whole new wave of shitstorm.
Now, I'm not absolutely going to talk politics at all. In fact, we're going to bring this to a close. But I will say this. I find it hard to ignore conspiracy theorists on either side. When did you see the story about this University of Pittsburgh research guy up in Pitt? He was a research laboratory lead researcher for this, and this is a story. Read about it. Just do Pitt researcher murdered suicide.
No, I didn't hear about the suicide.
Just look at it. It's a Pitt research analyst that last week released that they had just, and he had just seen a breakthrough that might eventually lead to a vaccine. And then this past weekend, it was a murder-suicide. Some guy killed him and then committed suicide in a car. And I'm like, well, son of a bitch, the government is trying to suppress us. Like, there's no way around it. There's no way around it.
I know there's some pandemic thing on YouTube that people keep debunking, and they're like, it keeps getting passed around. And I didn't watch the pandemic thing, but everybody that I trust, like the news outlets that I trust and stuff, are like, just research the people on the show and you'll find out they're all full of shit.
Yeah, that story about that guy from Pitt though is 100% accurate. It's made every news article, and it's like, why, like that? When stuff like that happens, you go, huh?
Yeah. Did you see the story out of Russia this week?
I missed that one.
So three Russian doctors have all fallen to their death from hospitals, and they all happen to be three Russian doctors who were raising alarms about Russia's inadequacy in care for COVID-19. And
yeah, you're going to die.
Of them seriously fell out of windows.
Yeah, you're going to die. That's the wrong country to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to murder the doctors, like, at least switch it up a little bit, you know?
No doubt. No doubt. That's crazy. But you got anything else, though? Here's the thing. The worst thing I could say about this pandemic in terms of the podcast, and I'm just speaking only from the podcast, is my two hosts, co-hosts, not the excluding my fourth co-host, the wife, who's in the house with me. My two co-hosts are probably, and this is not an insult, this is not me giving you guys shit, it's just the facts, are probably the worst co-hosts to have for very different reasons on coming out of this and coming back on the show. One, because your wife works in the medical industry, and the other because his wife is paranoid beyond belief and ain't anxiety ridden.
No, I agree. And the thing that I hate about this is, like, we're looking at each other, but the energy isn't the same.
Yeah.
We're flat.
Yeah,
I don't know if it transitions that way, but I just feel like we're flat.
Well, see, we can't
maybe
help
I'm being
it.
A harsh critic.
Sometimes there's a little lag from the internet, and you kind of you come through on the recording. It could be my end, but it comes through to my end with a little bit of delay like that, or there was like a brief pause. And yeah, I don't think our energy's low, but I don't think our it's just there's something to be said about the atmosphere, and which does come across of us drinking beer together. And you, Tommy, a slew of my other friends. I just miss it. I just at some point, I'm not far right, but at some point, God, the world has to start back up.
Oh yeah, yeah, and
or the suicide rate is going to pass pandemic, you know, or murder. So
yeah, I'm getting to the point now. Like even with our neighbors, like we've all kind of been hanging out together for a while, and we still try to keep that 6 feet, but when you got kids, like, it's impossible to keep all of our kids away from each other all the time. But again, up until this week, Rachel was the catalyst. Everybody else has been working from home, but one of my neighbors, Bryce, he's a bartender at the Hog House. He went back to work on Tuesday, so I talked to him yesterday. He does it on Tuesdays part-time. And I talked to him yesterday, asked him how it was, and he's like, it was way more packed than I thought it would be. And that kind of terrifies me. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm not paranoid and worried that much about it. Like, I'll run to Schnucks or I'll run to Home Depot if I need something once a week. But now hanging out with Bryce, like, man, you're exposing yourself to a bunch of fucking people who just need to go to a bar. Like, yeah. That's not on my priority list. That with you guys is on my priority list. Needing to go to a bar isn't there.
But in the same breath, like, some of them, these rules about how some restaurants and bars and things are allowed to open with, like, X amount of people, you have to bring people in order to service people. And bars and restaurants at 25% capacity is not generating enough income to pay for the overhead that will be the people there. So that's...
No, I listened to an economics podcast, and they had a restaurant guy on there, and they were like, how long can you last at 25% capacity? And he's like, 1 month tops.
Yeah, the months is the long, yeah. Like the biggest upside to that. Months, not years, yeah, not
he
keep
said,
going.
He said the average mom and pop restaurant at 25% capacity for a month is dead.
Yeah, no doubt. Because they're designed for a reason. They have the space they have for reasons, you know.
And the restaurant industry's cutthroat and the overhead is low anyways. Yeah. So you don't get into a restaurant
business. Well, the overhead is high. The profit's low. Yeah. The overhead's high. That's the problem. But let's not keep going down the pandemic. I'm ready for it to be over. So you're right. So we could have a normal episode. That first episode that when we are back in the world, you probably are going to need to Uber over. We'll do a Saturday and we'll just get shit face drunk in celebration coming out of it.
I put a 6 out of 10 that you probably won't even be able to air it, because it makes sense.
We're doing it. No, we're doing it. anything else to sign off on?
That's it.
It's just you and I on the podcast or the comic book version. So you're the only one that needs to say bye.
Hold on to your butts, everybody.
I'll talk to you later, sir.
All right, buddy. Love you. I'll see you later.
All right, back at you, my man. Oh, and that was that. We'll wrap this up. And I will edit this tomorrow.